Thanks, everybody, for being on the line today. This is the ongoing series that we're doing in an attempt to try to be as open and transparent as we can. Two phrases which are way overused, but nevertheless, well, I went ahead and used them against my better judgment. But no, I want to, as we walk this farm bill path, starting now through early spring when we get the bill on the floor, hopefully before that, we'll need to be able to communicate with you on a variety of formats, and this is one that we've had some success with. The a couple of remarks on tax reform and NAFTA. Yesterday afternoon, we had an executive roundtable with representatives from nine producer groups and members of bipartisan members of the committee to hear their concerns about the current state of affairs with respect to NAFTA. It was clear from every single one of them that they are anxious or beyond anxious about the idea of withdrawing from NAFTA. That came through loud and clear. No one said to not renegotiate NAFTA, but they all said to get it done and get it done expeditiously because of the uncertainty in the markets and the uncertainty with our partners is hurting their potential business that they have. And as you know from the facts, production agriculture has benefited greatly from NAFTA and still does. And so they're anxious to not be any more disruptive than absolutely the minimum necessary to get a new deal done. And so all the members that were there heard it loud and clear, and I appreciate the folks coming in and talk to us. The other big ticket item, obviously, Ways and Means Committee is hammering out the committee version of tax reform and listening to folks with respect to specific issues on agriculture, the clarification on pass-through entities, the impact that has on the way certain farming operations are structured. I've had direct conversations with Kevin Brady as well as two other members of the committee that appears to be unintended consequences of sweeping in new revenue streams that had previously been never subjected to the self-employment tax. The initial reaction from the folks in the committee, that was unintended consequence, that they were not using that increase in self-employment tax to as any kind of a revenue raiser or offset to other things. And so I think we'll get that fixed. That being said, the new split with respect to actively engaged folks who materially participate in an operation, they will have to have some salary coming out of that or income stream that is treated as salary. There's a safe harbor of 70-30 split for those that are actively engaged. That 70% would be subject to self-employment tax, as would salaries for anybody else working on a W-2 or working in for someone else working on a company. So equity there. But the unintended consequences of pulling in revenue streams and or leasing agreements or rental agreements that previously had been treated as passive income, those would all be capped at the 25% marker, but not subject to self-employment taxes. And so we'll see how that works out. But I'm hopeful that can get done. So with those comments on those two areas, let's go ahead and take some questions, Rachel and Molly, and see what's in everybody's mind. Who wants to go first?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Paul Brasher with AgriPol. Paul, just follow up on that question real quick. Do I understand you expect that that provision on subjecting rental income to self-employment tax to be removed from the bill? Is that the major?
Well, it will be. I think what happened was there were some provisions that were actually removed and it was struck that needed to be added back. But I believe that will be the case. Obviously, the proof's in the pudding, and we won't know until we see the chairman's mark over the weekend or early next week. But the impression I got from all three members I spoke with was that was an unintended consequence, and that they would work to get that fixed and addressed. So stay tuned. But we've got it on the table with them, and other folks have spoken to them about it as well. So, but I expect it to get fixed, let's make sure that we check it out when the bill comes out and it's in the chairman's mark that'll be actually go to the rules committee.
Thank you.
Anybody else on the line besides Philip?
Let's check out it, Mr. Fern. Perhaps you can tell us, what's in the bill that you've put together. There are accounts that you and Colin Peterson have written an entire bill. But yet no one seems to know my tenants.
Well, no, that's a bit of an overstatement.
Yeah,
we've not written the entire bill. That's a bit of an overstatement. We are working on these sections on it. We're swapping plans with CBO. As you know, during the health care debate, CBO was swamped, and we were having a hard time getting our estimates back and forth with those guys. And so we're in that process on a variety of other provisions. But given that I've been saying all along it would be November, December, January, February. It looks now like it's more January, February, with this month is completely full of tax reform. Next month will be full. In my conversation with the leader, next month will be full of fixing all the things we kicked that we delayed in September till December, as well as finishing off tax reform. So it looks now like we'll be able to begin answering more of your specific questions January, February, rather than November, December. That I was trying to get it done as early as I could, but as you know, there are other things going on the floor besides the farm bill. Even though that's hard, maybe hard to believe. It's hard for me to believe that anything else would be more important than that, but. That's kind of where we are. So we're building pieces of it, and at the appropriate point in time, we'll start having discussions with various folks. You'll also see some individual pieces perhaps crafted into individual standalone bills that members will begin to introduce, and you'll begin to see those at some point as well. And the plan then would be to roll those into the farm bill as well.
Mr. Chairman, Tony St. James.
Hey, Tony.
Ag All Day. And this question goes to cotton now. You've said in the past you've got to find a way to bring cotton back into Title I. I know last week or maybe this week Greg Abbott, Texas governor, was in D.C. with a letter from the cotton industry. What are you seeing happening on that front at this point?
Well, Tony, it's still a two-step process. The farm bill, which I have more control over, wouldn't take effect till the 19 crop year, and those payments wouldn't go out until 2020, and that's a long time from now, obviously. Cotton farmers need something in the meantime, in between. Still working with Sonny Perdue on a gen cost share repeat of what we did last year. I think the secretary is in full agreement on that. The issue is the amount that can be allowed and trying to get folks over at OMB to agree with that. But that would be the near-term step that the administration could do, and I fully expect will at some point soon be able to make that announcement. That's my anticipation based on the secretary's attitude of understanding just how hammered cotton producers have been. If there is some other legislative fix, we had an elegant fix last April. That would have been revenue neutral. That would have fixed cotton and would have provided the essential help that all the other commodity crops are getting to cotton now. As you know, that was torpedoed by Senator Stabenow, Senator Leahy on the Senate side, and we're unable to get that done. And so I'm open to any and every opportunity to try to fix this, but it's a minimum two steps. One, the farm bill. And then two would be what can we do in between now and then to get the help to cotton farmers that all other commodity folks are benefiting from. So stay tuned.
Good afternoon. This is Jackie Facka with Farm Futures and Feedstuff. You mentioned moving the timeline back a little bit on the farm bill. Can you maybe talk through when you'd like to see it come up? As I know you mentioned January, February, but from actually getting it passed and across the finish line, you've made a lot of commitments about trying to get it across and finished on time.
Sure. No, I'm thank you. I'm still set that way. January, February is my new target. I had always said, late fourth, early first quarter, and so I really haven't moved anything other than just begin to eliminate months that I cannot get it done in. So moving in January, February on the House side, conversations with Pat Roberts, my counterpart in the Senate, he would like to go quickly as well. And then that would give us ample time to work out the differences between the House bill and the Senate bill before we got to that drop dead date of September 30th. I'd been making those comments about getting it done on time, and I still intend to do that. I was informed by my staff after a certain period of time that the last time that was done was in 2002 when Larry Combest, also from Texas, was chairman of the committee, and he got that done. I think, well, I'm a chairman from Texas. I should be able to get that done as well. They mentioned that Larry had an extra $50 billion in income or revenue to or money to spread around the system to help get that that done and done on time. I'm not going to have those kind of resources at my disposal, so we're going to have to work really hard to make it happen. But, you know, the decisions we'll have to make will be hard. They will not get easier with the passage of time. We'll know in July, August what we have to get done, and so it won't be any smarter in October than we are in September. So there's really no reason to put those off. They're hard, or they will be hard. We just have to make them and then get this thing done. But I'm committed to continue to push on that process with all my political capital to get this thing done on time.
Mr. Chairman, it's Chuck Abbott again. So, what are the big decisions you have to make then?
Well, Chuck, we've got a variety of things. Obviously, cotton we've discussed. The milk program, the margin protection program, didn't function the way we wanted it to or we expected it to. That's got to be addressed. The agriculture risk coverage on a county basis triggered payments that just don't make any sense between contiguous counties. We've got to come to grips with that. A new issue that that is there that none of us have a real solution for yet, but is something that no one disagrees that we should look at, and that's a vaccine bank for foot and mouth disease. An outbreak of any size, which is certainly possible at any point in time, would devastate that particular area, would just devastate exports. You could look what happened the last time there was an outbreak in England in the mid-90s, how terrible that was. And so having that vaccine bank, most everyone agrees with it. The key is, how do you pay for it? Where do we come up with the new resources and or supplemental resources from industry or wherever that might be able to help us get that done? So we'll be in conversations with an awful lot of folks on that piece because it's new money. And we did 6 listening sessions around the country, a wonderful experience where we had from 6 to 11 or 12 House members sit for 3 hours and listen to constituents, didn't say a word, and just sat there and listened. We had 340-plus good citizens talk to us about what their perspectives are, what they wanted done. This is going to shock you, but not one of them asked for less money. Every single one of them wanted more money for their particular area, and these were all, for the most part, on existing programs. Only one person had an offset. But that offset would have set most everybody's hair on fire, so it was really not particularly helpful. So everybody out there is arguing for, justifying, and making the case for why there's their program should have more money than we had in 14. The 14 bill was supposed to spend $23 billion less than the 08 bill over the time frame. Looks like now it's going to spend about $100 billion less. And just the way our things work, I'm not necessarily going to be able to reclaim all those. So we've got some hard decisions to make, and it's going to require the wisdom of Solomon to make some of them.
Hi, this is Tegan Finn with Bloomberg Government. I had a question. If you're, looking at the last farm bill and looking at this one, what's the shift of focus, if there has been? In terms of titles or?
Yeah, no real shift in the sense that we want to probably do more fine-tuning than what you saw in the 14 Farm Bill. If there is a shift in focus, it is to focus like a laser on SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Over the last 30-plus months, we've done 16-plus hearings on SNAP. We've done an in-depth review of almost every single aspect of it. The process was intended to try to get the policy correct. You've not heard any of us speak one time about the amount of money being spent on SNAP. That's not been the focus. This focus is, how do we get the policy right? How do we reset the success metrics that says the number of people who get on the program and then get the help they need, get reset, get back on their own food feet, start making enough money to get themselves off them and their families off the programs and back into productive employment on their own and no longer needing the need of the program of the policies, that should be the metric of success, not how many people are on it or how much money we spend. And so you'll see next year as well, Paul Ryan still wants to run a broad welfare reform that the SNAP reforms that we're talking about will fold into. But if to answer your question specifically, the much greater focus this time on the SNAP policy, how do we get that right? How do we set in place a better better policy? How do we address the moral hazards that are baked into the current system? And you'll see us with some, I hope, I hate to characterize them as bold or whatever, but we're going to propose reforms to the policy that we believe are in the beneficiary's best interest as well as respectful of the taxpayer.
Jackie Katka again. You mentioned that yesterday the folks who met with you at the roundtable were beyond anxious about the idea of withdrawing. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you are doing to ensure that the Trump administration does not withdraw, and is there anything Congress can take to help with some of those anxious concerns that are out there on NAFTA?
Well, the president has a long and successful history of negotiating, and so I'm never going to put myself in the same league with him in terms of how to negotiate, and he's got those styles. He's got that responsibility, quite frankly. But continuing to point out that the harm that we did would be done if we did walk away from the agreement, the impact it would have on our two trading partners and the impact it would have on production agriculture particularly. I know Sonny Perdue is making the case to the president and his economic team about what the impact would be. They ultimately will get to decide, how they believe best and get this negotiation done. I think that they want to get a deal, but if you read Mr. Trump's art of the deal, he's not afraid to walk away, and so. But that's going to be up to him. He's got the responsibility and for making that happen. I took a group of members to Canada about a month ago to talk to those folks up there about trying to encourage them to be really serious about getting this negotiation done. And we had a good couple of days up there talking to our counterparts. We spoke with Sonny Perdue's equivalent. We spoke with my equivalent in the parliament, and a variety of other folks, including a high ranking fellow out of Trudeau's back office guys, to just say, hey, our guy's serious. Mr. Trump's serious about getting this renegotiated. And so every chance we get speaking out, I've got members that are, yesterday's meeting, they're better prepared now to speak out on behalf of their particular constituents or the folks that they directly represent. But whatever bully pulpit I've got, I'm using to just remind the administration that how important this is and that time is of the essence, and that the current NAFTA bill, our current NAFTA trade agreement benefits most all of production agriculture in America. You'll hear some folks that compete on vegetables and out of Florida and Georgia, and they've got legitimate concerns there. But on balance, now that we've we're past the textile issue, if you look at the others, corn and grain and beef cattle and pork and milk, all of those, Mexico represents a significant partner in those exports and as well as our trading partners in Canada. So for production agriculture standpoint, do no harm is a good way to put it. And we're trying to encourage the administration every chance we get at every venue. Every time I have a chance to talk to any of the president's direct advisors, make that case.
Mr. Chairman, it's Bill Brasher. Asking following up on the trade issue, how concerned are you about these nominees being held up over in the Senate? Greg Dowd over the NAFTA issue and a dumping issue, and then, of course, Bill Northeast being held up by Senator Cruz over RFS. And I'm curious as to whether you've talked to the senator about this.
I have not spoken to either Flake or Senator Cruz about this issue. I just know that Sonny Perdue is shorthanded, the USTR is shorthanded, and there's a lot of work to be done. When we withdrew from the TPP, the idea there was to do bilateral agreements with all those countries, which is something President Trump prefers. But you got to have people, and obviously you got to focus on NAFTA. But in the meantime, the rest of the world is not sitting around waiting for us to get our NAFTA deal redone. They're moving forward with bilateral deals that exclude U.S. producers, exclude the United States, and it's to our detriment. And so, getting whether that's at USDA or at USDR, getting those folks over there is, now's the time. And I can assure you my Senate colleagues couldn't give a rat's rear end about my opinion about how they do their job. But I can tell you what the impact is having on them not getting those guys confirmed and over to the into the traces at USDR and USDA, and that is things are not getting done that need to be done on a timely basis and need to be done now. And Sonny needs help, as well as Lighthizer. Both those have open slots that are vital to getting this trade deal headed in the direction that all Americans really want it to go.
This is Ellen Ferguson. CQ roll call. Have you talked with Chairman Roberts, gotten any kind of update from him on, I know he has voiced concerns about the holds and the slowdown on the nomination. Have you talked with him, gotten any kind of sense of whether there's going to be a breakthrough in the lockdown?
Not recently, Ellen. I do know that Chairman Roberts was in contact with the White House about making sure that that all the paperwork was done and everything was there when he gets when the nominees reach his desk, so he could then move expeditiously on making those happen. But I haven't spoken with him in the past month or so, but I just know that he's as anxious to get these things done and off his plate so he can move on to the farm bill as we are to get it done for all the reasons I spoke about earlier, why they're being shorthanded at USDA and USDR is not in our best interest.
All right, and I just wanted to ask you, you mentioned that we could expect to see some farm bill ideas popping up in standalone legislation. Will there be indicators of which ones are likely to
they'll be dealing with directing things within the farm bill, and I don't have a time frame to tell you when to start watching for those, but there's no reason for us to hide from you. But we'll start floating some of those. I can't tell you exactly when, but the plan is to begin running certain flags up the old flagpole, as they say, to see kind of what folks are thinking. But we'll start that process in December, January.
Okay, thank you.
This is Jesse Newman from The Wall Street Journal. I joined the line a bit late, and I think you were speaking about the actively engaged provision, so apologies if you have touched on this at all. But I was just wondering what sort of debate, if any, I guess, you anticipate taking place on subsidies, farm payments or crop insurance.
So we were not talking about those actively engaged rules. We were talking about the tax law, which has some long history of material participation in businesses so as to distinguish passive losses from actively operated businesses. And the code is using those phrases. So no conversation at this point about that, about the actively engaged. I used the wrong phrase. I misled you. Sorry about that. But no real conversation about where we might be going on those. But obviously the entire farm bill is up for consideration and comment. We'll address those as they come up. But I was speaking more of the material participation rules under the passive loss rules in the IRS, so that they intend to use those to determine who is materially participating in a business that would be required then to have some amount of salary associated with the pass-through income that's coming to them.
Thanks.
Sure. Well, yes, sir.
I can have it again since I
quit hogging the phone. No, go ahead.
Table, but I can't stop myself.
Yeah, I got you. It's like Snickers. You can't just eat one of them.
The scenario that you've outlined is rather different than the way farm bills have been written in the House in the past. It's more on a par with the way the Republican leadership has brought out tax reform and health care repeal, which is to say that the chairman of the committee of jurisdiction and maybe the Democrat, but usually not, sits down with leadership and writes a bill and, Diana rising fully formed from the ocean. There we are.
Yeah. Well, that's your interpretation. Certainly not what I intend to do. Colin Peterson and I are shoulder to shoulder on most everything that we'll be doing, and anticipate his active involvement in what we roll out. I've got to have Democrat help. Unlike the things that you're talking about, I have no anticipation that I would be there are 218 Republican votes, and so I have a different worldview on the farm bill than say some of the budget and tax reform and the health care and those kind of things, which may fit your model. But I don't have have the luxury of doing that. I'm going to be working with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to get as good a farm bill as we can get so that we can get a big vote in the House and then try to prevail against whatever it is the Senate might come up with in terms of the conference committee. But well, I've just got a different end game than what you're seeing with respect to these other issues that you're mentioning.
Okay, well, then how much can you cut food stamps before you don't have Senate 18 votes?
So you've never heard me talk about cutting food stamps. I've specifically avoided that.
In the last 10 minutes.
What's that?
I haven't heard you talk about it in the last 10 minutes.
You haven't heard me talk about cutting food stamps at all. What you've heard me talk about,
That's the point of where you're going.
What you've heard me talk about is getting the policy correct. I want this policy to be structured so that people get off it and back on their own 2 feet and get to the point where they don't need the program moving forward. That's the new success matrix. And so we've had all these hearings. We've had, 20, almost 30 plus months of hearings, and we have religiously stayed away from any references to food stamp cuts because that is a pejorative to most folks on the Democratic side, and I'm trying not to let that happen. So what we're going to have are policy considerations that based on our testimony we've heard in all of our hearings and based on the consultation with experts and everybody else that these are good, solid, rock solid policies that will make the program itself better. I have no idea what impact it will have on the fiscal side of it. We'll have to cross those borders once we begin to get those and put them in place. But my idea or my focus has been on getting the policy right, and I have no idea what it might or might not do with respect to spending levels.
This is Ellen Ferguson.
All right, last question, Ellen.
Have you had any discussions on categorical eligibility as it relates to?
We have, as G.T. Thompson has taken up the reins on the nutrition subcommittee, and so all those issues will be a part of our conversation. I don't want to front run what G.T. and the rest of us may decide to wind up doing with respect to SNAP, but yes, that's a part of the conversation as to what impact those have on the getting this policy correct. Well, thanks, everyone. Again, we'll be doing this periodically with this new broader group, and I appreciate everybody being on the line today, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks, everybody.